Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
From the Apostrophe Podcast Network.
They all come from the unknown north. Talent, drive, and a pride worth paying for. But just because they're above the 49th parallel, it doesn't mean we shouldn't celebrate them just as well. So give it up for these Canucks. Because our self-promotion sucks, and if they all went away, we sure would miss them.
Stu.co.
The Canadian Star System.
Oh, hello everyone. Welcome back to the Canadian Star System, a podcast where we speak with some of Canada's most talented people and try to figure out what makes them so good and what makes Canada so bad at celebrating our own. Each episode, our stars not only shine, but also shine the spotlight on another Canadian talent who they want the rest of the world to know more about. I'm your host, Steve Patterson, or as the people in my neighborhood know me, Scarlett and Nora's dad, who doesn't seem to have a job. And speaking about not really having a job, here's my producer and co-host who has twice as many not real jobs as I do, Diana Francis. Hi, Diana.
Hi, Steve. Just finishing up another job as I move on to this job.
I know. And they keep adding up, don't they?
The money doesn't,
but the responsibilities do.
It's a fine line to walk.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Have you ever had anything named after you?
Oh, that's a really good question. I don't.
Thank you.
No, I haven't. I am named after something, though.
Okay. What are you named after?
I am named after Diana, the goddess of the hunt and childbirth.
I didn't know that. I didn't see that that's where we were going with this.
Yeah, that's what my mother named me after. And I can't remember if it's Greek or Roman mythology. I get them mixed up all the time. But yeah, I'm named after childbearing and hunting. I have a dog named Hunter, and I chose not to raise children. So
yeah, all the pieces slowly come together week by week for me. If we're going as to where we're named after, my name is Stephen, spelt with a PH, because after four sons, my mom badly wanted a girl. So she was ready to name that girl Stephanie. And then I came out named Stephen. So there's a little personal history.
Wow. And do you have anything named after you?
The only thing I could think of is our mutual friend, hilarious buddy, Dave Hempstead. Him and I were drinking at his house one night. We were drinking many nights, but on this particular night, he tried to slide down the banister in front of his condo at the time. He's since moved. Then I tried to slide down right after, but he has a bigger butt than I do. So I fell over it and almost cracked my head open on the stairs. And he named the banister Patterson Falls. And he's tried to put it on tours of Toronto, but no takers yet. But I know it's there. What a pale in comparison it is to this week's guest. Let's get him on here.
Because there is a reason why you asked that question of if we had anything named after us.
And we went so far away with it, but this man has recently had something real named after him. We're going to talk about that. He is a multiple award-winning actor of stage and screen, including most recently a Canadian Screen Award for his work on Corner Gas Animated. He has also recently been named the winner of the August Schellenberg Award at the Imaginative Film and Media Arts Festival. He's the first ever Indigenous graduate of the University of Alberta's acting program, recently appeared in the film Kayak to Klemtu, which earned him another award as Best Actor in 2018. He's also appeared on the show FBI's Most Wanted on CBS, and he has an arresting personality. Not surprising, since he's played a police officer on TV for several seasons. He's a proud member of Cree Nation, a formidable debater, and here he is. He is Lorne Cardinal.
Yay!
Well, thank you very much. What an intro. Thank you.
Hello, sir. It's great seeing your smiling face, because when we've had you on Debaters, you are all business. You're not kidding around, even though we're a comedy show.
It's part of my rugby background to win at all costs.
Even against your dear friend and mine, Craig Lauzon, you guys debated against each other in Prince George, and you just, I mean, it was a dismantling, my friend.
Yes. Well, he needs to be, you know, taught now and again, and I'll take any advantage I can get.
We have so many things to try to get to in a limited time. In my research, I discovered that you're a cast member of FBI Most Wanted on CBS. I just want to make sure that is a drama, right? You're not on the run from anything? Like, there's two ways to be cast in a Most Wanted show.
Well, for the first time, I'm not running from anything. I am part of the family support for the lead character played by Julian McMahon. Oh. I help look after his daughter, my granddaughter, in the show with Irene Bedard.
That is fantastic. And that's still in production right now, is it? Or have you guys
wrapped? They're gearing up for season 3. We'll see what happens to my character, because COVID took a bite out of season 2. I was in the first episode, and then the COVID numbers were crazy, and I felt unsafe traveling through 3 airports to get to New York to work. So I said, I'm going to put the brakes on this. I don't want to die for making TV. I'll die for your show, but not making
TV. That's the right answer.
That's because we can do it remotely. Yes. Please stay safe. It's ironic, because you've never taken the safe route. The first time I met you, you and Craig Lauzon, the aforementioned, were doing a play called Thunderstick out in Winnipeg. And this is during Corner Gas, which is a very busy schedule. This was the original Corner Gas, not the animation. So you're in the middle of Corner Gas, and where most actors would say, I'm on a hit show during my downtime, I'm just going to relax. You did this play that is, you both played both parts, right? On different nights.
Yeah, we'd alternate every show. We'd switch roles. It was a phenomenal experience. It's something I highly recommend to every actor. It's like, if you get a two-hander, why not learn both parts? It drives the stage management crazy.
But it's mind-boggling to me that you would be able to do that, because I mean, maybe it's just that I don't like to memorize things, but to memorize two parts, and it was a very physical show. So my real question was, how good did it feel to get paid to throw around Craig every night? That was my real question.
It was awesome. And that show took a toll on us. We were like a couple of old hockey players. We were all chipped and bruised and battered, because that set fought back. You know, wasn't supposed to, but yeah, the car wouldn't move sometimes. When he'd throw me up against it, he'd actually throw me up against it. In the middle of a show, we broke the car window, which wasn't supposed to break, but we smashed it, and it was kind of like, oops, and we just kept right on going.
The show that I was able to see, I was out there, was, I think it was literally right after you had broke, it was the first show you did with, they hadn't replaced the window yet. So it was a broken window on the car that was covered with something. But you guys were really, going after it. That wasn't stage fighting as I've heard of it. You guys seemed to be, you know, as you said, really physically throwing each other around.
We pushed it as far as we could, and we enjoyed every second of it. And we tried to end the show with a bag tag. We'll have to look that up. It's a Canadian term. And so we both had matching bruises on our inner thighs from that every night. It's like, oh, why did we do this? Oh, yes, it's funny.
Some people are thinking that's a special at Zeller's. It's not. I didn't know about your rugby experience as well, that you are quite a high-level rugby player. Do you think that that helps that training with your acting and with your mental toughness?
Absolutely. Everything I do, even when I'm directing, there is my rugby training, which is teamwork. And if you're going to be a successful director, you have to realize you're working on a team. you may be the captain, but there's so many people working behind you. You have to pay respect to that and help them, and they help you, and they make you look really good if you do it right. I mean, I've worked with directors who are screamers, which never works out great because all they do is yell and everyone, you know, closes their ears and walks away. But if you're a team player, your teammates will try extra hard and go beyond the call of duty to make you look spectacular. And that's the kind of team you want to play on.
That is great advice. And do you suggest that all actors and entertainers play team sports for that real reason, for that very reason, and contact sport? Rugby is a tough sport, man. I've only tried to play a couple of times, and it is tough.
It is, and I'm paying the price now. I was invincible back then, but yeah. Now in my middle 50s, my back and knees are telling me otherwise. So the warranty is run out on both those. I would recommend for all performers and actors is to experience the excitement of working behind stage and behind the camera. Be a crew member, be a stage management, work backstage to see what those people do to make the actors look good. I went that route before I decided to be an actor. I wanted to check out to make sure if it's something I wanted to do. So I became an apprentice stage manager on a professional show in Kelowna. So I got to see real professional actors work in a rehearsal situation. And I also made their tea at every break and tea and coffee. And that was my job. I got to watch them. And, you know, I started answering questions the director was asking the actors. And I'd put my hand up and go, I know. And my boss would look at me sideways and just slowly shake her head. And I went, oh, right. I'm not part of this process. Okay.
Our listeners can't see Diana, but if she was nodding her head any more vehemently, it would come right off. What do you have to say there, Diana?
Oh, I absolutely agree that anybody who wants to be an actor or in front of the camera or in front of an audience in any way, shape or form, I think it should be mandatory that you have to do some sort of job to show you how much work goes into preparing for the moment where everything stops so that you can say your line. Because I think a lot of times actors forget that how much, you know, road has to get paved in order for your wheels to even, you know, hit it.
Yeah.
I went to theater school, but it was honestly the best education for me was the very first time that I ever directed a play, realizing how much work goes into just that moment for the actor to step on stage and say the lines. So know your lines, say your lines, you know, yeah. don't be high maintenance. Be part of the team.
Find your light, say your lines, don't bump into the furniture. Best advice I ever got from Augie Schellenberg.
You guys are running this interview with it. You guys don't need me here. That's my next question is about.
It's my way of trying to say, Steve, you have no idea how much work goes into this podcast so that you can show up and just open your mouth and start talking.
You know what? Some of us like beer. We just don't care how it's made. Now, speaking about the legendary August Schellenberg, Lauren, you just last year received the August Schellenberg Award from the Imaginative Film and Media Arts Festival. How much did that mean to you?
It meant an incredible amount, and I was totally surprised by it. I wasn't expecting it at all. So it was a nice email I opened up, and they said, hey, you're the guy this time around. And I was just so honored because the previous winners are, you know, legends themselves, and Tantu Cardinal is one of them. Michael Grey Eyes is another, and Tina Keeper, I believe. It's just wonderful to be recognized for my body of work over the years, you know, and it's especially endearing because Augie was a mentor and a dear friend of mine as well. I got to know him and Joan and the girls really, really well and really close. So it was very moving, very moving. He was a prince of a man.
Augie, I only had the opportunity to meet once through Craig, actually, mm-hmm. I met Augie, and he really did have this presence about him and this kindness that he carried himself with, and other people and other actors were drawn to him in a room. If he started to speak, you knew to listen. And I feel like you are right there in that category. It's why I think you're perfect to be named for this award. You've blazed such trails for young actors, and you're so kind and generous with your time and with your mentorship. So I don't know if you can win this award again, but I don't know who else are they going to give it to? Craig Lauzon? For God's sake. I'm just kidding, Craig.
I'll be the first two-peat winner. Yeah. No, he's fantastic. And I'm just honored for being recognized. One story comes to mind of Augie, and that's the kind of man he was. When he was doing a remount of The Ecstasy of Rita Joe some 50 years after he did it, He was playing at the National Arts Center, and he was told that there was someone waiting in the backstage who would like to meet him. So he goes, oh, yeah, okay. So he goes out there in his baritone voice. Hey, Moggy Schoenberg. It's a little Japanese lady, and she goes, I bet you don't remember me. And he's going, no, I'm sorry. He says, we were in grade 3 together, and those boys were teasing me and calling me names, and you stood up to them. You went up and you made them stop.
Wow.
So I just wanted to say thank you. And, you know, that is Augie in a nutshell. He was a voice for the underdog every single time. And, you know, it's that kind of, it's just ingrained in his genetics. So to be in anywhere near his sphere is quite an honor.
I read a quote of his that I know that you follow, and it's obviously served you well. Be respectful of everyone you work with, and you'll always be able to get work, which is great advice, obviously, and easy to follow when you work with great people. But my question is, how do you do that when you work with, arseholes?
There is a way you deal with that, and it's something my dad taught me as well, that you use them as an example. You look at them and you see what kind of behavior that can lead to. So do you want to be like that person, or do you want to be like this person? So you can see what that kind of attitude, where it will take you and what will happen. And that's the kind of message I try and, tell people or kids when we go to schools, when I go do school tours and stuff. It's be respectful. Be respectful to everybody you work with. It's such a small community that we work in that reputations get around really fast.
And I'm nodding vigorously again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I know. Diana's going to nod her head off, but it seems like such straightforward and easy piece of advice to follow, but it isn't always the case. Is there ever a situation you think of? I'm curious about this because, you know, Canadians in general have a friendly stereotype. In general, I'm talking about where we're, you know, polite, self-deprecating, almost to a fault. So where do you draw the line of being respectful with people, but also when you have to, pushing back in a situation if you have to push back?
That's an individual choice. There are things that I will definitely push back against. And then there are ways to not push back, but to manipulate it to get your point of view in there without ruffling feathers. So it's a bit of, you know, you got to use a bit of psychology, but there are some moments where you absolutely have to stand up and say, no, that is not going to happen. And I've had that a few times. It's basically problem solving. It's standing up when you see a problem. But when you do that, you also have to bring in solutions. Bring in a couple of solutions to that problem. So you're just not one of those people who point out that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong. You know, that's easy to do. The hard part is to bring in the solutions to correct those problems, to make an offer to the people going, hey, here's what we can do. We can do this or we can do this. That'll spark a conversation, maybe somebody comes up with a better idea, which is great, but it wouldn't get to that better idea without your offering first. So that's one way to deal with those kind of situations.
These are very wise words, my friend. You know, I generally see you in a situation where we're at a comedy function of some sort. I don't have a chance to talk about things like this with you. And, you know, it's easy to see how you've forged this incredible career that you have, and that you are legitimately a household name in Canada and beyond now. So I'm respectful of you. It's easy to be.
I learned all these things by mistake. So it didn't come out that I went, no, I showed up late. I did all these things that you're not supposed to do. I did them all. And I go, yeah, that's not the way I want to go anymore. So live and learn, as they say, and that's what I'm trying to do.
Well, a lot of people do the living part, but not a lot do the learning part. So good on you. I'd be remiss, Lauren, while I have you, if I didn't ask of your thoughts on all the recent findings in former residential schools in Canada this year, in Kamloops and now in other areas. It's been a wake-up call to many Canadians, but obviously for yourself as a public figure, as a member of Cree Nation, and with a direct relation to residential schools, how has this affected you, sir? And I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I mean, I can't, it's not that I can't believe it. I shudder to think about it. And I'm, as a general Canadian.
It's horrific news. And this is just my opinion. I'm in no way, shape or form a spokesperson for all Indigenous people, because everyone's got a different experience. But it's something that we all knew, all in, you know, all people, all nations, all Cree nations and Blackfoot and whatever, wherever there was a residential school, we knew in the community, we knew there were missing kids. We knew that there was abuse going on. We knew there were food experiments. This is something that we knew because we experienced it. But then again, we couldn't tell anybody because nobody would listen. We couldn't tell the RCMP because they were the one taking our kids on behalf of the church. We couldn't tell the government because they were the ones who put the Indian agents in place to keep us on reserve. It's a story that we've lived with for generations. We knew, and there will be more. There will be more, much more. And we're not including, this is graphic and horrific, but we're not including the young babies that were incinerated because the grounds were frozen and they couldn't bury them, so they just incinerate them. There's stories of that as well. So there's so many that will not be found, will not be counted. The last thing we need is another pointless study, because where did the last one get us? We got a nice published report. The government feels good for being proactive, but nothing changes. So it's about time that, you know, we get the political will to actually repair the relations between Indigenous communities and the rest of Canada and actually realize there is systemic racism in this country and it needs to be nipped in the bud. It's already too late. It should have been done generations ago, but that's where we sit. And it's and for people to see and hear about these discoveries, good. And we're not, you know, not blaming everybody, but it's, hey, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And willful ignorance is part of the problem. And the way to combat that, to help heal our nations, is for self-education. Don't wait. Yes. Don't wait to ask the first Native person you see. There's Google. There's resources everywhere available. You have to take it upon yourself to learn, to educate yourself about not every country, just in your neighborhood, in your region. What's the closest reserve? What's their history? Put it upon yourself to go find out. And that's how we educate, and that's how we open up our eyes to each other.
You know, I agree about the people not knowing, and people, as my, I'm part of the problem because I didn't educate myself enough. I'm now having frank discussions with my kids about it, and I hope that they do make this part of the Canadian curriculum so that it has to be talked about, because it's been ignored, obviously, for far too long. And I hope that this is a changing moment in history this time. I really, really hope so. And I hope that we can all be part of the solution, as you say. Can we talk a little bit about the We Matter campaign for youth that you're involved with?
Yeah, that was another nice surprise. I was just asked to give my thoughts to the youth in this country. And I was just part of the teachings that I've been taught over the years from my dad and other people and stuff. And it's about self-love. And it's a universal theme for everybody to take the time just to acknowledge your own gifts and your own accomplishment, because everybody is different. Everybody has gifts. And where I come from in the Cree belief, Creator has endowed everybody with a gift. And if you're not using that gift, then you're disrespecting the Creator. So there are gifts, and you should be able to tap into them, acknowledge them, and use them to the fullest. Because nobody is like you.
I mean, I find that easy to believe, and so does my wife for me personally, but it's never in a positive context. It's always So how can you not hear anything I say till the fourth time? But that's a different topic completely.
That's a form of tinnitus.
Selective hearing, I think my mom used to call it with my dad. Let's talk Corner Gas a little bit, if we could.
Yeah.
You just wrapped on production of the animated series. What an incredible story Corner Gas is as a Canadian success story, to take off as a sitcom based, you know, in a rural community, to have incredible numbers, not just by Canadian standards, just by themselves, then to have a feature film made, then to have a new life as an animated series, to keep together the original cast. What do you think was the magic that made that show what it was? Was it a combination of things? Because what an incredible cast that was to work with.
I think it was a combination of things. Number one, having the most brilliant writers available for Diana Francis as well, because she won a shiny little thing too, didn't she?
Oh, what, that?
Yeah.
Oh. It's in the room behind her. Every episode we talk about that. Yeah.
But it was a combination of having brilliant writers and a brilliant cast. And our chemistry was, it's one of those rare things where you actually get eight people together and they actually like each other and they work well with each other. And we were blessed to have that, because I've been in casts where, you know, people can't stand each other and they work together and pretend they're this family, and in reality they can't, you know. But we never had that problem. We were like a big multiracial family. We had, you know, ups and downs like any group, but at the end of the day, they're, you know, very dear people who mean a lot in my life. And I think the characters we played are the reasons that people across the country fell in love with the show, because they all reminded people of someone they knew from back home. Not every day. I flew to Cape Breton one time, and it was the first time I was asked by security to step aside so I could frisk them and they could take pictures. Like, okay, so I'm frisking them as people are going through the metal detectors, right? And they're going, I'm next there, boy.
Had you ever considered yourself playing a police officer for, what is it, a decade of your life?
No, but I got to say, I look pretty good in rayon.
You do, buddy. You carried it off, for sure.
He's a fun character to play. He's, like all characters, especially in a comedy, they're two-dimensional. And one of the things I really loved about the show and about the writers is that they never made an issue about or drew focus to the fact that Davis Quinton was a Cree man. I think the only time they mentioned it is when I said it,
right,
when I was trying to scalp tickets. And my partner, Tara Spencer Nairn, says, "You can't do that." And I said, "Why? Because I'm a Cree man?" No, because you're a cop and it's illegal. Oh.
Yeah, that's a good
one. Oh, right.
I remember that joke. I love that.
Yeah, that was an interesting one, too. Because, again, it's that pushback thing, right? Because in the script, they wanted me to say Native man.
Yeah.
And so I had a discussion with David Story, our director, and I said, "Well, I never identify myself as a Native man. I'm a Cree man, and that's how I identify, and I feel stupid saying I'm a Native man. No, I'm Cree. My people, it's my nation." So we had a many takes, and I said Cree man all the time, and they kept trying to get me to say Native man. And I said, and they said, "No, just do one. Just do one, just so we can have it." And I said, "Yeah, okay, let's do it." So we did it then again, and I said Cree man, and they were just kind of like, and I go like, I can do this all day. And if you're not careful, I'll start speaking Cree, and then you'll be
hooked. Then it's on. Yeah. Good now, for you for do? Standing your ground on that. And then, yeah. I mean, I was wondering where that joke was going to go. With Tara Spencer, this is a bit on the nose for this show, because the whole mandate is to talk about Canadians that we all know, and then for them to introduce new Canadians doing important things. I don't know Tara very well, but I'm, you know, we're Twitter friends, and I noticed that she's tweeted at some point, "I would rather try to explain theoretical physics than try to explain the Canadian star system to my children." It is this thing where you and the cast of Cornergast were at the upper echelon of the Canadian star system. You'd be the most recognizable people as an ensemble cast in Canada. And still, you've got to go audition for other parts. We just don't seem to have the number of productions to move on, or, you know, once you're on a show like that, that's the show. Mm-hmm. So where do you go from there? Do you feel like that is a situation that's, you know, still the case in Canada? Do you feel like it is improving, where you can be on, go from maybe one hit show to the next in Canada?
No, for some reason, they don't allow that. they look down on success for some reason. So it's still the same thing. It's like, to be considered legitimate in this country, we have to go down south to strike it rich there. And then they go, "Oh, we should get him. He's Canadian." Now that I've, you know, moved to LA or New York or whatever. It's a weird thing, but I've experienced it on all levels. When I was in Edmonton, they wouldn't hire me because I wasn't from Toronto. Then I went to Toronto, and then they wouldn't hire me because I wasn't from New York or LA. What's going on here? And it's for every actor in this country too. I've talked to people in Halifax, actors in Halifax, and they say, if they're shooting a big feature film here, the local actors never get a chance to read for any of the lead roles. It's always cast out of Toronto. And if they don't have Toronto representation, they don't get considered at all. They don't think they're legitimate or dedicated, or, you know, it's just ridiculous. So, you know, there's this feature film shooting in your own neighborhood and you can't even get a bit part in it because you don't have a Toronto agent. It's ludicrous.
That is crazy. We're shooting ourselves in the foot. We've only got, you know, so many people to work with. If we can't grow this industry from within, if we're constantly having to attach American names and or Toronto names, I'll put it out there, when you're doing local productions, that's what stops local productions, right? It's what doesn't let them grow and let the actors promote themselves up the ladder.
Poltergeist Animated is the perfect example. You know, here we are, finished our fourth season, number one in the ratings, number one in the Comedy Network. So their solution, let's cancel it.
Was it canceled? I wasn't sure if the run fit. Yeah, they canceled it.
Yeah, our fourth season is our last season. So now when I see Brent, I said, so how's that animated movie coming along? Let's see what we can squeeze out of this baby. You know, we've gone 17 years. Let's push it.
I'd say start warming up the pipes for Corner Gas the Musical, Lauren, because it can't be far away. How does animated voice acting compare for you to all the other things you do? Because you're obviously a great live screen actor. We haven't even gotten into the Shakespearean training that you have and have made great use of. How does voice acting compare in your world?
I love voice acting. I love being in the studio because it is a different set of skills. It's now that people can't see me, they have to relate through my voice. So I'm forced to pitch it higher, lower, make it more of an exciting adventure for the old eardrums. So that's the thing to keep in mind when you're in studio and finding what my body does to help make that sound, you know? Yeah, you find yourself doing weird postures and stuff when you're behind a microphone just to get that sound, that expression, that feeling out on the airwaves. So it's quite fun that way. I enjoy the challenge.
What was it like seeing an animated version of yourself, the actual animation of Officer Davis?
The first incarnation I saw, I was very boxy. So the only thing I asked of the animators was to give me a waist. That's all I asked for, just a waist. And I'm left-handed, so make sure Davis is left-handed. They had everything on the right-hand side, which is just, you know, no.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, you got to shift stuff over and put the gun on the other side because he's a lefty and you're drawing a righty. So, and that was my big input.
I mean, if it was me, if someone was making one of me, I would demand the Ned Flanders treatment where he rips off his shirt and he's just got inexplicable abs because, you know... That's the only time it's going to happen.
Why not?
Yeah. Let's ask this question because we alluded to it in your intro. We talked about getting things named after us. Mine is obviously Dumb. It's a stairwell from a drunken accident. You're getting a theater named after you, a real bona fide theater now called the Roxy in Edmonton, will soon be the Lorne Cardinal Theater. What is that like?
That is another huge honor because I love the Roxy. I've done many, many of productions there. Actually, Thunderstick was part of the Theater Network stable that we did one year. We toured across the country with show, Craig and I. Yeah, it's the Black Box Theater that they have there. There's two, the main stage, which is like 250 seats-ish. That's the Nancy Power Theater. And then downstairs, there's a Black Box multi-purpose room and seats about 90 to 100. And that's the one they're naming after me, which is totally an incredible honor. I was, again, surprised and touched that they would even think that I deserve such a thing. It opens in the new year. I'll be there with bells on and put on my fancy dress and off we go.
What is the main, other than your name, you know, attached, I imagine, in some form, is there a situation where there's a constant pair of seats there that no one can occupy? On the off chance you're in town, is it a bar tab? I need to know because I need to know whether I should go after getting one named after me or not.
I'm not sure, but those are good things to put in my rider.
Yes.
We talked about the space, and the space is going to be one of those safe spaces, a welcoming space for all artists to come in.
Right.
We're using the Cree word tawau, which means there is space for you here. We have space. And that's the kind of sentiment we want to put out there as well.
That's perfect, my friend. I can't think of a more... deserving person to have their name on that space. And I know that you'll be out there, of course, with whatever you want to wear on for the induction ceremony.
We'll be right back after these messages. Hey, Steve.
Oh, hey, Diana.
What's on the docket for today's fake ad?
Well, first of all, I love the word docket. Let's have that on record. You know, I'd like to mix it up today. I love that the whole point of this show is for our Canadian guests to shine the spotlight on someone they think should be a star. But what about me?
You want our celebrity guests to shine a spotlight on you? You're kind of right in the middle of the light here, Steve.
No. You're not getting my idea here. I want to shine a spotlight on someone, too.
Oh, I get it, and I love it. So you're saying use our fake ad space today to shine a mini spotlight on someone that we think everyone should know more about?
Exactly, a mini spotlight, or as a human would call it, a flashlight.
So today's flashlight, I'd like to share about someone that we've already mentioned a couple times in this interview, Craig Lozaw. Not only is Craig a hilarious comedic actor known for his many roles in air farce, he's also an incredible dramatic actor with shows like Trickster and the upcoming zombie frontier movie Ithaca. Plus, he does a great job in Shakespeare, as proven by his amazing run as Oberon in Midsummer Night's Dream at Stratford. And if you cast him in your show, he promises to learn everyone's lines, not just his own, and play all the parts. That's just good value, though you do have to pay him a little extra for that.
Sounds like quite the Canadian treasure.
He is a Canadian treasure. And I'm not just saying that because I officiated his wedding, which I did.
You did? Wow, you do weddings, Steve? Oh, it's too bad I already agreed not to get married to my boyfriend.
It is too bad because I had a number of great lines planned. Craig Lozaw, actor, comedian, friend, and a hell of a guy to get a bag tag from if you're interested.
To find out more about Craig Lozaw, be sure to check out our show notes wherever you're currently listening to this podcast.
I'm on it. That's where I'm listening to it.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
And now back to the Canadian Star System.
Before we introduce our second guest today, I have a little section here that we call quick questions.
Quick questions.
So the idea here is your answers don't necessarily have to be short, just quick.
How about truthful?
They can be truthful or not.
Oh, okay.
The problem when interviewing really talented actors is I never really know. All right, here we go. We touched briefly on your rugby playing. So could you please tell us what position did you play in rugby?
I played them all when I found my true calling, which is a flanker. I knew I was not a prop because I'm 6 foot and I was 160 pounds and I popped up like an unwanted zit. I knew that wasn't the place for me. Yeah. Flanker is where I was blindside flanker.
What is your favorite Shakespearean character to play, and or which Shakespearean character would you most like to play?
I would love to play Richard III at some point. It's a fantastic character. I love it. I haven't seen any productions of it, really. But that's something I would love. I was influenced heavily by Sir Laurence Olivier on his film version of Richard III. So that's always stuck with me. And the courting scene of Lady Anne is one of those, you know, one of the brilliant scenes where it starts, where he's trying to woo her over the corpse of her dead husband, who he killed. And she knows it. And by the end of the scene, he's agreed to wear his ring and meet him later. So that's awesome.
Lauren, can I tell you, this is a fun fact. I got into theater school by auditioning with the Richard III opening monologue.
Oh, nice.
I was in grade 12. I'm a girl and I had a bad wig on and like a hump on my back and a big cape. And I can still to this day do that entire opening monologue. It's Can't brilliant. Necessarily I mean, remember people's now. Name. Oh, I could. I won't.
I know you could. I know.
I used that particular monologue in a film audition I was doing. I found it a bit offensive, the requirements, because it was a native character. And this director said, you know, speak your language if you can, as if it'll ever be used in the movie. And tell us the story of your people and use an indigenous language if you know it and stuff. And so I went, okay. So I did the Richard III speech in a Scottish brogue. And I said, well, here's a little something I picked up in my travels. And so Scottish being an indigenous people to Scotland. And Richard III to show that, you know, I can do more than. And then the character I saw that I didn't get it, surprise. But I saw the character that I auditioned for in the finished thing, and there was no language.
No.
And then he had one scene, and then he was gone. And it's like, yeah, so why go through all that? And, you know, it's just ridiculous.
I would like to see you play Richard III. You could do whatever. I'd actually like to see you do it in a Scottish brogue, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
You're not a police officer, true, but you've played one on TV. If you could make up one new law that people had to follow, what would it be?
I would have to say it would be the a-hole law.
Yeah,
if you're an a-hole, the other person gets to do something to you. And there'll be no repercussions. It might require some attitude adjustments for some people.
I love
Otherwise, they might have a tough day.
Love it. If you could arrest people just for being arseholes and just be like, it's the anti-arsehole law. Oh, my God.
That's it, yeah. Go cool off for a couple hours. There you go. Think about what you did.
How much
and off you go.
Better would the world be? I love it.
Oh, man.
This one might be a loaded question. Favorite celebrity hot dog eater, 12-time consecutive Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest world champion Joey Chestnut or Brent Butt? We know Brent likes a good chili dog when he can.
Oh, man. I'd have to be a hometown boy and go with the Brent Butt.
I think so.
I've seen his technique. Those mandibles are scary when you see him up close and inactive. They're kind of like chipmunks fighting inside his cheeks there. It's kind of a horrific thing to see. It's like, oh, my God, there's somebody in there.
And finally, which Oscar do you think is truly grouchier? Sesame Street's Oscar the Grouch or Corner Gas's Oscar, Eric Peterson?
You haven't experienced grouchy until you've been called a jackass up close.
And he's such a sweetheart of a man. So it's funny that he plays that so well. Yes. Those are the quick questions. Those are all the questions we have for Lauren Cardinal, who's going to introduce us to our second guest now. Except for this, we just like to do this every week. If you would, Lauren, complete these two sentences just quick off the top of your head.
Mm-hmm.
The Canadian star system is
as rare as Neptune's sky dust.
First time we've had that one.
Wow.
And being the next door neighbor to the United States is like
having a malodorous sleeping partner.
Excellent use of malodorous.
I know. I don't think you need other people writing your words, because those are two of the best answers we've ever had. Lauren, thank you so much. And please don't go anywhere. You're going to stay here with us while we meet the guest you're introducing us to now. But thanks so much for all the answers today.
Nice.
Now, would you introduce us, please, to the guest that you brought?
It is my great honor to introduce Chris Robinson, Executive Director of CAT, Canadian Animal Assistance Team. Hero bar none. Woo!
Well done. God, you're good with the introduction today. Man, what a wordsmith. Hi, Chris.
Hello, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. Thank you for being with us today.
No problem. It's been a lot of fun just listening.
First of all, easy question right out of the gate, because you work with animals a lot. So let's do a softball one to start. Cats or dogs, which are better and why? Go.
Oh, that's a terrible thing to I would say I like them both, but I probably lean towards dogs. I just find that I can I connect with them, and I really, yeah, I definitely am more of a dog than a cat person.
Nodding vigorously again over here.
God, Diana, she's really good. She's so excited. Yeah. She's really in agreement with everything this episode. Chris, in our short time together, when we've been waiting for technical difficulties to be resolved, we know that you have some other animals to choose from out there. Just so the listeners know, you have how many miniature donkeys right outside your window right now?
I have 7 miniature donkeys, a couple of horses. I have 3 cats and a dog.
Yeah, see, because it takes 3 cats to equal the worth of one. I'm a dog person, obviously. We're going to get into cat in just a minute. I mean, the organization, not the animal. How is it that you and Lorne have gotten to know each other? And he's brought you on here today.
Well, it was several years ago that Lorne met the then executive director of CAT and just connected very strongly. And then I took on the position, and Lorne was really very willing to be supportive of our organization and our work. And so I said to him that I think that if he is going to be a spokesperson for us and help to promote our work, that he should get up close and personal with what we do. So I invited him and his wife, Monique, onto one of our projects, and we threw them in the deep end, and they were helping with recoveries and surgical recoveries, and we taught them a fair bit, and hopefully they had a lot of fun, but they got to see firsthand what we do.
We should probably talk about what you do, because we've jumped the gun and we've got Lorne Cardinal doing surgery on animals and no one knows why. So what does the Canadian Animal Assistance Team do, please?
Basically, we're a Canadian charity, and we take volunteer veterinary teams into mostly remote and underserved communities that have a lot of animals and really would like to work with us to come up with a solution to help with the animal welfare. And so we set up MASH style animal temporary hospitals right in the community, so everybody can get access to the services. There's no cost to the pet owners. We basically go into communities that have invited us, and we do a pilot program. And then after that, we go for 2 to 5 years annually and work with them.
Which is an incredibly worthwhile thing and might fly under the radar, right, for many people as far as a cause to be supported, because, you know, we're trying to constantly figure out what to do and how to better serve many of the communities in Canada anyway. We don't think about the animals that are out there. And what do you say to people who would say, well, we've got to take care of the people in the communities first before we take care of the animals that are out there?
Well, it's interesting because they're really very interconnected, especially when you've been to a lot of these communities. There's a lot of people who love their animals. They don't want them to not be able to get the kind of services that are going to help them as far as their welfare goes. There's different diseases that animals can carry that humans can get. And so we address that through vaccination and deworming programs. And so we work with the one welfare idea or principle, in that when you help the people, you also need to help the animals. You also need, it also helps the community as a whole. So it's all one big package. And so definitely, having been to a lot of these communities and seen how much people love their animals and are extremely eager to get the services that we can provide, it's definitely helping the people as well.
I hadn't thought of the direct connection. I wasn't sure that the one welfare system was. Is it predominantly the same domesticated animals that you would find in urban centers, cats and dogs, or are there, you know, are you tending to horses and things like that out there as well?
Our organization basically does cats and dogs, and it depends on the community we go to. Some communities, very few cats, and then other ones where there's a lot of cats. So it really is, it depends on what part of the country we're in. But those are the two predominant species that we work with, yeah.
And Lorne, what did you do with Kat on your first trip up there? I'm very curious now. You were hands-on.
Yeah, I was spent a lot of time going, oh, wow. Cool. Oh. And then I was also on the receiving end when the little cats and little dogs would come out of their anesthesia after they're being spayed or neutered or whatever. So I'd be making sure that they were okay. And I would just cuddle with them. And there's nothing like that says love than seeing a doped up dog looking at you going, oh, wow, that was something. I was just incredibly overwhelmed and impressed by the volunteered techs and veterinarians that were there applying their trade and selflessly giving their skills to these communities. So that's one of the reasons I want to promote CAT as much as possible, because the work they do is just incredible and such selfless, giving, generous people. So they deserve a lot of credit.
How would the animals get there in the first place to a remote area? Would they have to be brought from somewhere else in sort of an adoptive program? Or are these just animals that have been up there for a long time that are, you know, been reproducing within the family? Kind of. Maybe reproducing within the family is not the way to put it.
I think a lot of the communities, the animals have been part of the community for a very, very long time. They've been there for, mm-hmm. you know, generations. And they're a very important part of the community. And the reason for having those animals has changed over the years, but they're definitely something that is generationally has been there. And then there are some communities that some animals have been brought in from outside communities and things like that. So I think it's a mixture depending on the location.
Are there a lot more working animals in there in terms of, you know, cats to kind of hunt things and dogs to help with more outdoor lifestyles up there, or is it the same situation as these animals are pets and companions for the most part?
There's definitely a mixture, and again, it really depends on the community. So a lot of the Inuit communities that we go to that are really, really far north, there is definitely a lot of sled dogs. As they're still used for hunting and for transportation in some of the communities. They're also, you know, there's races between different communities with their dogs and stuff like that. Some of them are used for protection. One of the communities we were in, one of the gentlemen that owned a dog said that one of the things that is interesting it's a very small community. And they said, if there's a polar bear within 5 miles of the community, every dog in the community is barking its head off. They know that bear is there. And the people actually listen to what the dog's saying and they get out there and they chase the bear off before it gets into the community. So, you know, there's different reasons, but there's also ones that are just their pets. There are animals that live in the houses and are raised as a pet. And so that's something that's kind of been evolving and changing. And so it depends on the animal and it depends on the individual person. Definitely lots of different uses. And the cats are either pets. They're not usually kept for anything that is like they're not usually kept for something like mousing or, you know, some kind of hunting or something like that. That's just something they do for fun. Mostly if they're pets, they're
small package delivery.
That's it. Yeah, exactly.
They're the Amazon of the rural areas. I love it. You just put something on the back of a cat and let them run it over. One thing I love about the program, of course, it's volunteer driven. The people that are doing it really want to be doing it. But another aspect to it, which I think is an important one for people to know, is that obviously travel is a big challenge of the organization, just getting there to these areas to help out. And one way that people can help if they don't have the time and expertise to get to these areas themselves is to donate Aeroplan miles to people that can travel, because those have been building up for a lot of people who haven't been traveling over the last course of the year. And I know lots of people want to get away on holidays for themselves, but it's a nice way to think that those miles can be put to great work for an organization like this that can help send people that can be there to help. Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Our Aeroplan program is so important to us. We wouldn't get where we need to be without it. Some of the communities, because of their remoteness, we have to get to wherever the closest place is that we can go by Aeroplan. And then we still have to continue on smaller planes or trains or automobiles or whatever the heck we have to do to get there. But traveling around and having a team of people go to these communities, it's incredibly important to us that we have as many Aeroplan miles as we can, because it's a lot of the way that we get our people to where they need to be.
And can I just ask, is part of the program as well, when you get up there, are you able to, you know, pass on some of the measures that people that go to the vet all the time would be able to just say the vet does? So is a part of the program educating people in some of their own care of the animals because they don't get to have those regular visits?
Oh, absolutely. And I would say that one of the really interesting things is that when we're in communities, it's like a knowledge sharing that we do because we're learning just as much because this is often a different culture from what we are used to. And we're learning all sorts of things from the community members as well and how they see their animals and what kinds of things they do with them. And so we basically ask, is there anything that you have questions about? Is there anything that you need some help with? Whatever we can do to help. And so humane education is a huge part of helping with animal welfare. So there are groups that we work with that will help in communities that want to have a stronger humane education component. But our everyday work with the pet owners, we have great opportunity to just sit down and chat and let's hear about, you know, your experience and what's happened with your pet and what can we do to help? Because you have to be also aware of, you know, you can't necessarily make a recommendation and help somebody with something when there's a lack of services available. So you have to be able to work with what they've got and help out as much as you can.
One thing I'll just say that I was really struck by and really appreciative is when they were spaying the animals in their mash style hospital, the kids from the community were able to come in and watch and see what veterinarians and vet techs do and watch their animal go through the process and come out the other side all doped up and wait for them and help them with their recovery. It was great for the opportunity for kids to see behind the curtain of their vet and possibly, you know, inspire them. Seeing them in action is inspiring.
I'm curious to know as well what COVID has done to change things, because I know that for so many people in my world, people really kept their sanity because of their pets, or they adopted new pets during the pandemic because they were going to be home. So I know a lot of people in the sort of were kind of cleaning out the local shelters. But I imagine that for some of these more remote communities, if you weren't able to get up there to do spaying and neutering, that the population of the animals could potentially, within the course of the pandemic, really get out of control. Post-pandemic now, what do you, post-pandemic, as we're sort of, things are easing up a little bit, what do you feel like it's going to be like when you go back into some of these communities?
It's been very frustrating to not be able to go in. And one of the things that we, at the beginning of the pandemic, is we talked to all our different, we had 8 communities that we had lined up that we were going to, and that we had to postpone all of them, obviously. And so we talked to the community leaders and some of our people that are in the community, they're helping us with organization, and just said, you know, what can we do to help out? Like, is there anything? And we started something called Cat Community Corner. It was a blog. But anybody in any of the communities that wanted to have access to it could get it. And what we said is we want it to be defined by the community members. We don't want to say, here's what we can, you know, teach. We want to address topics and answer questions from people that are really relevant to what is of concern to them. And so one of the things we were kind of laughing about a little bit is that one of the blogs was, okay, you have a dog, it's not spayed. So what can you do to reduce the risk of your dog getting pregnant again? And so we would go through all of that stuff on that blog. And then the next blog would be, okay, so your dog's pregnant. What do you do? So we were, you know, hoping to reduce the risk of pregnancy. But then if they got pregnant, okay, so what can we, you know, some of the questions were about the best way to take care of the litter and how soon can the puppies leave and things like that. And so, and we answered things like, if your dog's got a face full of quills, what can you do when you don't have a vet there, and that kind of thing. And we ran that program for a year and kept getting all sorts of topics sent in to us. And so that was our way of reaching out. And now I think when we are finally going to be going back, we're hoping to do one of the projects in the late fall, that it's a very localized one, so that we feel we can have some COVID protocols. And as long as everything keeps going in the positive direction, and then we'll be back at it full speed next year. But it's going to be crazy.
Chris, thank you so much for sharing the CAT program with us today. And best of luck, because, you know, I know that things, as they start, travel starts to come up again in the world, this service is much needed in many communities around Canada. So thank you so much for doing. And thank you for introducing me to the concept of a MASH unit, but for animals, because now in my head, I picture dogs and cats as doctors in a MASH unit. I think it's a great idea for a show. And Lauren, if you don't make this show, I'm going to. All right. And yeah, please go to, what's the website where people can get more information, Chris?
It's www.cat-canada.org. And I want to thank Lauren very much for asking me to come on this show, because he's become a good friend. We've been known each other for a while now. His support is just amazing. So thank you, Lauren.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate everything that you've done. And I have to give a huge shout out, because I would not have been paired up with Kat if it was not for the incredible Monique Artaud, who saw Donna Lassiter, the former executive director, speak at a alumni award, which she won at Thompson Rivers University. I was doing a keynote, as they gave me an honorary doctorate the year before. So I was doing a keynote. Then we heard Donna speak, and then Monique and Donna hit it off. And she said, you got to meet this gal and see what they do. And I'm a sucker for animals, kids, and rugby players. I'll do anything to help support those three. So when I heard the work that they were doing, I was all over it. And, you know, that astounding, that the historic work they did in during Katrina down in New Orleans, when that flooding happened, that they went down there and they saved thousands, if not tens of thousands, of animals by selflessly, again, putting the animals before themselves. So, you know, it that kind of heart and passion, I support any day of the week.
Wow. And thank you so much for having Chris on for this fine cause, and not that other organization that sends wayward rugby players to remote communities to just eat people's food. So thank you for that. Lauren, what is up next for you, my friend, other than the ribbon cutting ceremony that I'm sure is coming up on the soon to be named Lauren Cardinal Theater?
Right now, we're just busy establishing our production company, Through and Through Films, Monique and I. And she's right now on the World Trade Center for Vancouver on the advisory committee. So she's getting our international connections all lined up and using and giving her expertise to those people as well. So we're, you know, in the process of doing that. You know, to get something done in this country is a long process. So that's where we're at. We've got a list of projects that we're working on and looking for international partners to get her done.
Thank you so much, sir, for sharing everything that you're doing. The career you've already put together is already, I would say, would be more than enough by most people's standards. And you just keep going and just keep going into different areas. So thanks so much for everything.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And thanks for inviting me to the Canadian Star System.
Oh, you're in it. You're in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Thank you both so much.
Nice. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks a lot.
The Canadian Star System is produced by Diana Francis and Steve Patterson in association with the Apostrophe Podcast Network. If you'd like more information on today's guests, please visit our website at canadianstarsystem.ca, where you can find links to their work and their socials. Speaking of socials, you can follow at Canadian Star Pod and at Apostrophe Pod on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And be sure to subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts. Our editor and sound technician is Donovan Deschner of Fracture of Femur Productions. Music by Mark Camilleri of Imagine Sound Studios. Special thanks to Terry O'Reilly, Debbie O'Reilly, Callie O'Reilly, and Nancy Patterson, who is an honorary O'Reilly. And since you're doing such a good job of listening to the credits, there's a bonus clip for you after Steve sings us out.
So give it up to these good nerds, because our self-promotion sucks. And if they all went away, we sure would miss them.
Stu.go.
The Canadian Star System.
It's something I can't understand. I wonder if Bruno Gerussi had this problem.
I mean, when your show runs 18 years, you don't really have to look for another one, frankly. If you're looking for logs for 18 years, your time's taken up.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.